Almost 2 weeks after the Christchurch mosque massacre was streamed live online, Facebook has promised to extend its ban on hate speech to prohibit the promotion and support of white nationalism and white separatism. The ban takes effect next week. It comes as the federal government presses ahead with its plan to jail social media executives if their platforms fail to remove terrorist content. And it's a busy time for the technology sector, which is still lobbying the government to amend its controversial encryption bill that was rushed through Parliament on the final sitting day of last year. Paul Shetler was the chief executive of the federal government's Digital Transformation Office. He's now an advisor to governments and business. Welcome back to Breakfast.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Let's start with Facebook. It says it's long prohibited white supremacy on its platform. Over the past 3 months, it's come to realise that white nationalism and separatism can't be meaningfully separated from white supremacy and the organised hate groups. Is this move going to be effective?
It could be. I have no idea. I literally just saw this morning. I think that they're probably right to do so, but the difficulty is going to be in sort of drawing the line.
Mm.
You know, actually, you know, what is white supremacy? What is white nationalism? That, to some extent, can be in the eye of the beholder, and oftentimes is used as an insult against people who other people don't agree with.
And this will play into those arguments around free speech.
I think it definitely will. I mean, for instance, you oftentimes hear Trump supporters being called white nationalists, for instance.
Or Trump himself.
So I think this is actually going to be quite an interesting topic.
As part of the change, Facebook is going to be redirecting users who try to post white nationalist content to a non-profit that aims to de-radicalise people. Is that the sort of social responsibility that society is now expecting from these social media giants?
Look, I think literally just having seen this just now, I don't know exactly how effective that will be. That could potentially be helpful in de-radicalising people. I really don't know.
On the back of Christchurch here in Australia, the government's now also considering jail terms for social media executives. You're laughing. And this is if their platforms fail to remove terrorist content in a reasonable amount of time. I know you've described this move as embarrassing. What's wrong with it?
Well, I think what's wrong with it is that I just think it's fundamentally unserious. I think it's something which is being said in the heat of pre-election. And an attempt to sort of strike a tough guy pose.
So when you say unserious, do you mean it's unachievable?
I think to a very large extent it is unachievable. I think it's unlikely that the United States is going to say, okay, Mark Zuckerberg, we're sending you off to Australia to jail because you weren't quick enough in terms of getting rid of some offensive content.
What about local executives, though?
They could just say we don't operate in Australia. Australia already has a bit of a problem when it comes to technology with the AA bill. And now with this, people are looking at Australia and saying, what's going on there? There's something very strange. You know, even Microsoft came out yesterday and said, listen, we're under pressure from our customers not to be building data centers in Australia for precisely that reason.
I'm going to explore the issues around the encryption bill in a moment, but just sticking with this move around Facebook executives being responsible, certainly in the wake of Christchurch, I spoke with Stephen Sheeler, who's the former managing director for Facebook here in Australia and New Zealand. He called for executives to be liable for these kind of situations.
Well, that's interesting. I don't know how much of that was a PR statement on his part or not. I can say that Facebook did, they took off 1.4 million videos, I think like the first 24 hours after the Christchurch massacre. And they didn't even know that the terrorist content was on there until I think it was 12 minutes after it finished streaming, because nobody had notified them. So the problem that they've
got... But isn't that the issue? The problem is they've not been responsive enough?
Well, no, the problem is, it's not that they're not being responsive enough. The problem is, how would they know? If you consider you've got, 3 billion people on Facebook?
But that's the whole point around this live streaming debate, that they should be moderating this. They should be able to stop it, or they need to put a delay on or remove live streaming.
If the argument is just get rid of live streaming, then that's a bit of a different argument. I tend to think that Facebook probably isn't going to get rid of live streaming. And I think that sort of the request that they should get rid of live streaming is unreasonable.
This is the first time we've seen a massacre broadcast internationally. We don't want to see it again.
Right.
If the answer here is to stop live streaming, or what is the alternative?
Well, there's lots of alternatives. We could also ask people to shut down the internet. We could ask people to shut down social media. We could ask people to do all kinds of things.
But
I don't think that shutting down live streaming is necessarily going to happen either, because live streaming is something.
So the argument is that Facebook needs to be responsible in its policies around live streaming.
Facebook does need to be responsible, absolutely. And I think Facebook is being responsible. When Facebook has about 20,000 people reviewing content and deleting content consistently every day, that's responsibility.
Well, the argument post-Christchurch was that there's not enough staff if they weren't able to detect this kind of content.
Imagine you've got billions of people posting content onto Facebook. Is every single post that every single person puts up there going to be vetted before it goes online? Now, just think about the volume of posting that goes on there. Think about how much activity goes on there.
But this is a green line for this to happen again, isn't it?
So you're talking about maybe millions of employees doing this? I mean, where do we stop with this?
But Paul, are you comfortable with this green light for this to happen again?
I'm not uncomfortable with any green lights. I'm just saying, are we comfortable with actually shutting everything down?
The issue around encryption was the subject of a major conference yesterday.
Yeah.
The federal government's encryption laws are controversial. They're certainly well and truly back in the headlines. As we understand it, the laws allow police and security agencies to access encrypted messages of suspects, including terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
The Microsoft President Bill Smith yesterday used a speech in Canberra to warn that companies are no longer comfortable storing customer data here in Australia. Were you surprised to hear him openly attack Australia in this legislation?
Not at all, because if you talk to people in the technology business, pretty much everybody is viewing Australia as a pariah when it comes to technology. People are reluctant to open up businesses here. So we had this ideas boom, and we had this whole, hey, let's do all the startups thing going on for quite a while here. And we completely shot ourselves in the heads with it when we did this, because we basically said every single Australian employee is a potential fifth column. Every single Australian employee can be asked by the government to put code in unbeknownst to the company they're working for, and can go to jail if they let their employer know. Who would hire an Australian? I've worked for several technology companies. Do you think that any of them would hire, I don't know, if this was China, that we would do this, that we would say, oh yeah,
bring them in? Well, I think the argument yesterday was that it's turning Australian companies into Huawei's.
Exactly. Pariahs. Absolute
is
pariahs.
Is there evidence, though, of international companies shunning Australian companies because of this law?
I can tell you that I know people who were going to be opening up offices in Australia. I can't say who they are, but I know people who were, and they have decided not to now because they're afraid their products would be compromised.
The Home Affairs Minister, Peter Dutton, has said that these laws are essential for national security due to, and I quote, prolific use of encrypted messaging apps by criminal syndicates. Isn't that the priority here, being able to get at the communications of would-be terrorists and other serious criminals?
I don't know that weakening products is necessarily the best way of doing that. And I don't know that breaking encryption is necessarily the best way of dealing with security issues either.
So our security officials have all advised our politicians that this is needed. What's the alternative?
The security officials may have advised politicians that, but that doesn't necessarily make it the case. And it doesn't necessarily mean that people should be doing it. We're already seeing right now the effect that it's having on the Australian economy. That is already a bullet through the head to the tech sector here.
These laws were rushed through Parliament last year.
Yes.
They did get Labor's support.
Yes.
Now Labor's Shadow Minister Ed Husic says that he'll be seeking three changes to the bill, banning the injection of so-called systemic weaknesses into company systems, strengthening judicial warrant requirements, and commissioning an inquiry into the law's economic effects.
Yeah.
What are you hoping
What I'm hoping is the same thing that I'm hoping with this general discussion about jailing executives, which is that we actually have a reasoned discussion, one which is not entirely in the heat of the moment where people are taking extreme positions and then saying, oh, you know, we've got to act. It doesn't mean, you know, that we're doing is the right thing, but we've got to be seen to be doing something. I'd much rather see, and I agree with Ed, by the way. I think he's absolutely right in everything he's saying there. I wish that that conversation had happened before the bill went through, and I wish that our government right now, instead of threatening to jail executives, and, you know, I mean, really, just had a bit more of a serious conversation about what needs to be done, a reasoned one, because we all want the same things here. And this kind of posturing has not helped Australia so far, and I don't think it's going to help Australia if we keep on doing that.
Will these Labor commitments, if they were to get into power, make a difference?
I think they would. I think they would significantly ameliorate things, yeah. The biggest danger has always been the injection of basically bugs into the software, right? The fact that anything which is developed in Australia or potentially by an Australian overseas could actually be defective on purpose. And that's a terrible thing.
I think they talk about looking at systemic weaknesses mm-hmm. into company systems as a result of these laws. Can you yes. have encryption laws without systemic weaknesses?
It depends. I guess encryption laws, when we say encryption laws, what are we talking about? What do we want the laws to do, right? We can have all kinds of laws.
Well, we want to be able to access those messages.
Well, that might mean breaking into encryption, right? So maybe we can't.
So where does that leave Labor then? I mean, it means abandoning that space, doesn't it?
I don't think that space is one that we should ever have gotten into.
All right then. Well, thanks very much, Paul. We'll see how this pans out.
Thank you.
Paul Shedler is the former chief executive of the federal government's Digital Transformation Office and an advisor to government and business these days.